RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Everybody, welcome to Crush Performance. Jeff Rochelle here, the con man away again. Brennan sitting in. Thanks so much, my man. And we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, any questions, comments, smart remarks, do so. We love them all. If you have a topic you'd like us to investigate or a question, get to us via the email. It's info@crushperformance.com. We answer every single message we get. And you know what? We have dedicated segments and shows to ideas from our audience. So let us know. We're interested in what you're interested in. And today, a really big show, people. Maybe for me, one of the most important shows of 2018 so far. It's called Drunk and Stoned, The Impact and Effects of Alcohol and Drugs on Performance and Development. This all started back in January when we heard that CBD oil was off the banned substance list, as well as alcohol. Alcohol still remained on the World Anti-Doping Agency's banned substance list for a number of sports. It's off now. When we talked to the guys at WADA, they mentioned that they're letting the independent federations deal with those rulings and those issues. And the removal of CBD oil kind of opened a can of worms. We know a lot of athletes down in the U.S. where marijuana is legalized in certain states and the issues they're dealing with. And with legalization coming coast to coast in Canada, we really dove in to see what are the issues going to be. All right. It's one of the most important episodes of the year. And when we started digging, this turns into a monster. So today we're going to scratch the surface and try to get to some of the things we think we should be thinking about. And as we dug deep, there are a lot of major issues coming up. We're going to be joined by Rebecca Hines-Saw. She's a assistant professor of the Department of Community Health Sciences at the University of Calgary. Really interesting conversation there. We're going to look at the impact on youth and youth development, because everywhere we looked, that's where the data went. That's where the research went. What's going to happen down the road? What issues are we not dealing with now that are going to pop up later? And what haven't we thought of? I mean, frankly, we haven't been through it yet, so we don't know. There are so many questions. And when we started sitting down to map this out, we had a simple one that sort of steer the direction. We pointed our compass in this direction. How does alcohol impact performance? Well, it's pretty basic. It might go deeper than you think. And when we talk about drugs, focusing mainly on marijuana, pot, weed, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, questions came up like, how does it impact performance and how will it impact performance, you know, from the bigger picture and daily regular use? We know that in most professional sports, it's going to remain banned, at least for now. I'm not going to say that's going to be a permanent thing. We never say never, but for now, it is still banned in professional and organized sports. How does it impact development? Maybe the most important question, because this is a topic that popped up everywhere we looked. What are the long-term effects going to be, especially for the young brains? Listen, the human brain still develops up to the age of 25. We have legalization starting at the age of 18, we think, in most provinces. That's 7 years, 6 years of use while the brain is still developing, a regular legal use. We don't know what that looks like yet, though there's some speculation out there. What are the issues we're facing, you know, when it comes to legalization? I mean, there's a lot of issues here that we maybe probably haven't even talked about yet. And again, what can we learn from certain U.S. states and other countries where it's legalized? They have had their issues and they're having their issues. And I think we need to get ahead of it here before it creeps on us in Canada. And then, of course, there is the medical benefits of marijuana pot, very well documented. And of course, in most sports, there's medical exemptions for use inside of controlled sports where there is doping and testing. And then the CBD oil, which again, as I mentioned, came off the banned substance list. Look, CBD oil, THC, hemp oil, what is the difference? What is all this stuff? How's it going to play out in the big picture? And what do you need to know? And let's face it, what do we need to talk to our athletes and our kids about? If you remember a show we did a few months ago, we talked about PED use, banned substances, performance-enhancing drugs. And one of the most alarming stats that came out of, I think, maybe Crush Performance in all of 2017 was the fact that on major surveys, over 75% of North American high school kids, grades 9 to 12, had never had a conversation about banned substances and steroids and drugs with a parent, a teacher, or a coach. 75%. So I think that, you know, looking at that issue that we had with the PEDs and maybe what we're looking at here with the legalization of pot, we just need to start talking about it. And what's driving this show is, hey, what do we need to think about? And again, Brandon, when we started digging here, I'm telling you what, it was a Pandora's box. We opened up the box and it blew open. Questions on production, purity, public health, potency, you know, every issue that we see in the supplement industry, this could potentially apply to CBD oil and the legalization of marijuana. We don't know how it's going to be regulated yet. And how is that going to work? How does cannabis impact development and brain development? So many questions. There's so many questions. We're going to get to some of them today. This brings us to our Twitter and text question of the day. Our text line is 101260. Let us know on Twitter. It's at Jeff Crush. Do you have concerns? If you've had a medical exemption, what was it for? How did it work? And the big question of the day, alcohol or pot, which one do you think is worse? Brandon, we're going to throw this question directly to you. Hopefully our listeners will come in 101260. Let us know what you think. Your concerns. Do you have concerns going into this?
Well, I mean, we've already seen alcohol legal forever, it seems. So, I mean, we kind of know some of the impacts of that on youth. So we're talking about marijuana specifically just because of the way it's being legalized. And the one thing that I worry about going forward would just be maybe the drive of athletes that are 18, 19, 20, especially in junior. You think about junior hockey, you think about the OHL, WHL, QMJHL. With pot legalized, like, how are these leagues going to be able to curb that? And how are these players going to be able to keep up the level of development that they need to get to the next level? I think that's the really big concern I have, is just that younger age. Because like we've said, we don't exactly know the brain development yet. And we don't exactly know how that's going to affect the drive of these players.
No. And I agree with you there. There's no question about it. And more importantly, for any athlete in an organized sporting environment, and we got to talk about this in the developmental levels where we don't have testing. I mean, you can't show up drunk to work. You can't show up drunk to your team and to your team practice. That's just common sense. But what are the effects going to be when legalization of pot comes around? A little harder to detect. It totally acts different in the body. There's different outcomes. And if you're in a sport that actually tests NCAA right up through every single major sport, it's still illegal. So for the young athletes who are aspiring, a word of caution as this thing comes to fruition. And you mentioned, you know, in the NFL, we've seen it, and they're one of maybe the strongest sports looking at marijuana and pot, you know, Major League Baseball is there as well, but we're still seeing their players getting nailed.
And how does it affect the CFL? Because the CFL, I mean, NFL, we can talk about it all day, but it's not like the states are all legalizing marijuana right now. But in Canada, it's going to be countrywide. So how does this affect the younger players going to the Eskimos? How does this affect the younger players going to BC? That's something that I'm interested in seeing, too, because the CFL, I don't think it's been as big of a problem as the NFL in terms of in the public eye. But it's something that I would like to hear about. I like it being discussed more. How is this going to affect those players coming out of the draft?
Exactly. They're going to have to be smart, just like any other banned substance, right? They're going to have to be incredibly smart. There's going to be peer pressure. There's going to be a lot of different things. And when it comes to the CBD oil, that opens up a whole other area of concern, because we don't have, or we don't know about the regulatory guidelines that are going to fall on this. So CBD oil has incredible benefits. When we look at the science, anti-inflammatory, there's issues in certain brain diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And this is well researched. There's right now 20 clinical trials going on in North America to look at the benefits and how this works. We don't know what dosage helps what particular, issue when it comes to health issues. We don't know how pure this is going to be. There's very little information on regulatory. And if we're taking CBD oil for the benefits of, let's just say, simply anti-inflammatory benefits to get away from ibuprofen, which would be great for me, because we know how hard ibuprofen can be long-term on our athletes. It's dangerous. It's dangerous. And for our athletes, for everybody out there, we cycle all of that stuff for our guys, and we caution every athlete we work with. But there's some potential really powerful anti-inflammatory properties to CBD oil. Let's just talk about that. What happens if we're out there in a market that's unregulated like the supplement industry, and it happens to be contaminated with THC or it's not as pure? I mean, there's studies out there right now that have shown 63% of the CBD oil currently on the market doesn't have any of the CBD oil in it, or it's contaminated. So we have all these issues we need to talk about, and we're going to get to some of that today. Brandon, just to give you an idea of how smart our listeners are, we put out a Twitter poll. At Jeff Crush is our Twitter handle. And we asked, which is worse, alcohol or pot? Which one do you think? And our listeners, just being as smart as they are, 93%, of course, said alcohol. And we're very familiar with the downside of alcohol. We'll talk with that about that later in the show. But pot, 7%. There's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of issues as well. We're going to get to that. Coming up after this break, we're going to have an incredible conversation with our guest, Sarah Hines-Saw. And we're going to look into some of the preventative, strategies that are going on around the world that have been used and successful. And in particular, a very powerful program in Iceland that they've instituted revolves around sport and getting kids active to get their kids off of alcohol and drugs. Incredibly powerful. And we're also going to look at some of the issues that I think we need to face in terms of the sporting world when it comes to the legalization of pot. Later in the show, we'll talk about the effects of alcohol, just to remind everybody of how dangerous and powerfully destructive alcohol can be for development and performance. That's all coming up on Crush Performance, everybody. Stick around. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Crushell, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, Brandon behind the glass. We're your weekly source for performance information. Today, a really big show, an important one, maybe the most important show of 2018 to date, though we like to think there's value in every single one of our episodes. Today, we're a little passionate about this one. In January, CBD oil came off of the banned substance list, as did alcohol. And it got us thinking about what are the implications of this in the sporting world. And then we looked at legalization of pot in certain states in the US and from coast to coast coming in Canada and other countries where it's already legalized. And there are issues that I think we need to talk about. And frankly, that's what the show's all about. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, do get to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. Info at crushperformance is the email. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on Facebook, Crush Performance. Throughout the text question, you guys can get to us at 101260 is the text line. Standard text rates do apply. What is worse, alcohol or pot when it comes to performance and development? And of course, our brilliant listeners, so far the poll is running at 93% alcohol. So there are some people that feel there are major issues when it comes to pot. Well, let's get to it. There's a lot of questions we need to answer and a lot of areas we could go with this. And with our hour, we're going to scratch the surface, but start the conversation. We're joined now by Rebecca Hines-Saw, assistant professor at the Department of Community Health Services at the Cummings School of Medicine at the University of Calgary. Rebecca, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been looking forward to talking with you, especially when we started investigating this topic. You know, Rebecca, our show title, Drunk and Stone, the impacts on development and performance in sport. But when we started investigating, this went much, much deeper. And your area of focus in some of your research is actually on youth cannabis use and the public health policy implications of cannabis legalization. Maybe just give us a little bit about your background, Rebecca, and how you got into this sort of area of research.
Yeah, I'm a youth substance use researcher, so I've primarily been researching cannabis and tobacco use by teenagers for about the last 10 years. And since Canada announced that it was on the path to legalizing, I'm one of the few people in Canada that's focused on youth education and prevention. So I've been doing a lot of talks around the province and actually across the country, trying to bring everyone board in terms of what we know about cannabis use amongst youth and what we're going to likely see once we legalize and what we need to put in place in order to protect youth and ensure that, you know, the consequences for young people are not dire. Because there's a lot of panic right now, and I think people are scared, but my message is keep calm and legalize on.
I like it. Keep calm, legalize on. Okay, yeah. That's a great handy little catch, because I'm not going to lie to you, Rebecca, I'm one of those parents, I'm one of those coaches, and maybe also, you know, one of those teachers, so to speak, in terms of the young athletes I work with. And I'm really concerned about this next generation. You know, we weren't the generation to go through prohibition and the legalization of alcohol. You know, we've seen some crazy things happen in our time, but this is a big one. And looking forward, you know, our research was sort of focused on the implications in sport and development, but we opened a can of worms. And everywhere we looked, Rebecca, it was leading us back down to the path of the youth and the next generation. So how about this question to you, in everything that you've done in your research and what you see coming, do you have any major concerns?
I don't have major concerns right now, because I think that I'm quite confident in the fact that Canada is proposing legalization with strict regulation. So when you look at the framework that we're proposing federally and what the provinces are doing across jurisdictions, it's not the profit-driven, corporate-driven model that we've seen in the United States, in states like Colorado, where we have seen some concern around some of the outcomes, but also it's a vastly different model of regulation than what we see for alcohol. So much stricter regulations around marketing, around promotion, around packaging and point of sale. So in that regard, I'm hopeful, because we do know that corporate profit and public health do not mix well when it comes to substance use, right? So you're trying to find that sweet spot where we can allow people to sell this substance and make money, but yet protect public health by not having, you know, profit be king and selling cannabis everywhere all the time to everyone.
We're talking with Rebecca Hines-Saw, assistant professor in the Department of Community Health Sciences at the University of Calgary. You mentioned the U.S., and I think this is a good place to start. There's certain states that have legalized marijuana, and they've been dealing with their issues. But there's also other countries around the world who have been through it and have really led the way. You know, you mentioned about the regulatory and for-profit issues, and there are some regulatory issues. You know, Rebecca, CBD oil came off the banned substance list, and it's available to some degree, but certainly in the States, it's very unregulated. And that makes me a little bit nervous, especially for our athletes who are in sports where there's testing, because we don't know about the purity, we don't know about contamination, we don't know a lot about how it's going to roll out.
Sure.
And what are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, right now, if a young person wanted to access CBD oil, they could through a medical authorization. So most of the stipulations around non-medical use, that will be limited to people 18 or 19, depending on what the province sets. But right now, if you were seeking cannabis, and most people who are seeking an oil, a CBD oil, are looking for that relief or some type of medical use, they could get a doctor or physician authorization, complete that, send it to Health Canada, and then online to receive CBD oil. Is CBD oil available from licensed producers in Canada? But right now, you only purchase that and have it delivered to you in the mail.
Via the mail. Interesting model, yeah. As well, right? And again, right. That's I think something that will sort of mature and develop as we go, as we move on. And the THC, just so everybody knows, that's sort of the psychoactive component of the cannabis and the cannabinoids.
Right.
And the CBD, the cannabidiol oil, that has actually proven to have some health sides as well. And this sort of spurred on the medical side of this whole conversation, which there seems to be right now in the research some very, very serious merit here, Rebecca.
Yeah, I think we definitely need more research. So one of the problems that we've had in cannabis science is that there are some people in Canada, physicians, who've been looking at this for different conditions for, you know, decades. But because it's been a Schedule I substance and it's federally regulated, it's been very hard to do research, in particular in the United States, where we know a lot of our, you know, mega randomized control trials come from and where a lot of pharmacology research comes from. So, you know, there hasn't been the capacity of researchers to access cannabis other than the government-approved strains that you can use in a lab that's on a university campus. So what I'm hoping with this new regulation is that governments will also invest a lot more in the science so we can know more. But I think as a baseline, when we hear from patients, they report a lot of benefits, but we just don't have that gold standard scientific evidence around a range of conditions, right? People are saying it enhances their well-being and quality of life, and there's lots of misinformation out there. So it's a really, really confusing landscape right now, and we definitely need more high-quality research.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think that's exactly where everything is pointing. When we get to the for-profit side, we all know, everybody listening knows, you and I both know, that things can get a little shaky, so we're hoping that those government regulations do stand. Rebecca, you mentioned the legalization and the ages might vary from province to province and in state from state to state down in the U.S., 18 or 19 years of age. So here's one of the questions I had for you when we talked earlier, and one of the concerns that I'm really trying to investigate here through our initial research. Are there going to be developmental issues, you know, exposing younger brains to a legalized, access to pot and marijuana? If we look at 18 years of age, we know the brain is still developing into the mid-20s. Do you, in your research, have any concerns in that area? Because that's something I think we just need to talk about, if nothing else.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a really complicated thing to unpack. And along with one of my colleagues, who is a neuroscientist, we made a submission to the Alberta government when they were asking to hear from the public and from researchers around shaping their legislation. And our submission actually argued that we should set the age as low as possible, which is 18. That's what the federal regulations lay out as the lowest point, because Alberta's drinking age is 18. And our concern was that if you don't harmonize these two ages, you really send a message to youth. You know, if you set the age at 25, you're saying, well, cannabis might be risky to you, but alcohol is safe. And actually, the information we have from the effects on the developing brain, we absolutely know that alcohol is more harmful, right? And it's widely available to kids under 18, even though we've set the age at 18. The other thing to know is that cannabis use is high among youth in Canada. So for 15-year-olds, we actually have the highest rates of youth amongst developed nations already. And some of the numbers that we see in our federal statistics and reporting show that about 23% of kids to 28% of kids, depending on the survey you're looking at, have used cannabis, right? So it's already there. It's already happening. If you set the age really high and you have these regulations, you prevent young adults, 20 to 24, who make up, you know, 50% of the consumers, from accessing this legal, safer supply. And that's really important, because when you access an illicit market, you may not know the THC concentration, you may not know what you're smoking, the supply can be contaminated with pesticide or mold or fungus, and you are interacting with people, you know, who are undertaking illegal activity. So we said, in order to safeguard youth health, it seems counterintuitive to most people, but really setting the age 18 along with alcohol is the best policy move.
Now, we're talking with Rebecca Hines-Saw, assistant professor at the University of Calgary, whose research has really focused on programs and youth cannabis use through public health policy implications and legalization of marijuana. Rebecca, those ages are something that we saw in our research as well, but your stats on adolescent usage, that I haven't heard. That's kind of alarming to me, 23 to 28%. That's a big, big number. Listen, when we talk about sort of, you know, the usage in the younger ages, we're seeing a lot of mixed numbers out there. In one research we saw, study we saw in recommendations of, you know, in terms of the legal side, actually carrying, you know, the amount for personal usage, those ages range down to as young as 12. And that's an interesting number, but there's a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the decriminalization part of the legislation. So in that regard, there is a misperception out there because, you know, these are policy terms and they're not in the common lingo. So the difference between decriminalization and legalization. So what we've done in this new framework, what Alberta has chosen to do based on what's laid out in the federal law is say, we are going to decriminalize youth possession for kids 12 to 18. So that doesn't mean it's legal for a 12-year-old to smoke cannabis in Alberta. What it means is that if you're carrying up to 5 grams, which could be up to 10 rolled joints, if you're using dried flower to smoke cannabis, that is now decriminalized under Alberta provincial law. So that means you'll be confiscated by police, you'll have your parents or guardians called, and you'll receive a fine. So like a civil penalty. And that's new. And that's also recognizing that youth is quite widespread, like alcohol. And we don't want youth who are experimenting with substances to have a lifelong criminal record. And some of my colleagues have argued, and I support this stance, that it's actually more harmful to a young person to have a lifelong criminal charge or young offender charge for cannabis use. Then that harm outweighs the potential harms to their development of experimenting with cannabis.
Yeah, great, strong point. And that's very, very important to clear that up. And I like that. That's a real intelligent move, Rebecca. So that, I guess exudes some confidence from our behalf that we're thinking along those lines in the big picture.
Yeah, I mean, it has real implications, not just for people under 18, but over 18. I always say, you know, when I give a talk to people who are worried in the public, I say, if I'm an adult and I have a criminal charge for cannabis possession, so I wasn't selling or trafficking, I had a small amount for personal use, I can't coach sports at my community, right? I need a clean police check to do that. I can't work with vulnerable people, can't chaperone school field trips, can't travel to the U.S. Lots of things that are cut off from me, and it carries a stigma, right? And so we're trying to, in setting this legislation, say this is something that a lot of Canadians are already doing. It's something that many people admit to have tried. Our legislation hasn't worked at all, so we're going to try something different. We're going to try legalization with tight regulation and see if we can reinvest instead of investing in charging people and prosecuting them.
Yeah, so great. You're listening to Crush Performance. The topic today, Drunken Stone, the impact and effects of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. We're talking with Rebecca Hinesaw of the University of Calgary. Rebecca, those numbers, again, I just got to go back to them. You said youth numbers and usage in youth are as high as 23 to 28%, depending on which study you look at. And I think those, I'm not sure if I'm alarmed by those numbers, surprised by those numbers, or if I sit back and think about it, okay, that sounds about right. Either way, you know, you were talking about, you know, a very important part of our society and our culture. And with all the education platforms that have gone on, it seems to me that education just isn't working, especially when we look at those numbers like that. There was an incredible project in Iceland that you pointed in my direction. I'm incredibly enamored. And you're right. I loved it when you sent that link over to me. This just sounds so right. Sport and activity can play such a big, big role in just sort of, I guess, creating the mindset and the culture around this whole legalization.
Yeah. So this is known as the Icelandic model, and it's pretty revolutionary for what we've done in addressing substance use, because you're right. What we've done here in North America and in many jurisdictions is well-meaning adults have got together and written a pamphlet or done a television PSA warning kids about the dangers of drugs. If you're like me and you grew up in the 80s, you saw those commercials where it was like, this is your brain on drugs, and they crack an egg in a frying pan and now your brain's fried. You know, in some ways, I think we're still doing that when we're saying cannabis harms your brain, you're at risk for brain development problems if you smoke under 25, right? Kids, I hate to tell parents this. I'm a parent. I work with teens. Kids do not care about long-term health effects in most cases, right? Athletes are of course, motivated towards physical well-being and health and ultimate performance. But a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, that information about how this potentially harms your body just goes in one ear and out the other. And we know that from tobacco use, right? So for those kids inclined to experiment and take risk, we need a better message. In Iceland, what they did is they said, we're not going to lecture kids about the harms of drugs. We're going to give them other things to do than use drugs. So they rolled out free community recreation programs. And this is really because it's a cold country. There wasn't a lot of things for kids to do. So they rolled out indoor programs, and they saw their rates of alcohol and tobacco use drop by half from over 40% down over a generation, right? And this is really significant. This is something we haven't seen before.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic, and I love it. And now to see the data and to see that they've actually gone through the process and made the commitment to this. This is a major commitment. Basically, what they did, as you mentioned, is they said, all right, kids, here you go. Free activities. You have free sports. You can go from the badminton courts to the basketball courts to the swimming pool 3 days a week. You can take music. You can go take part in plays and acting in the arts. Really, really smart. And to hear the number drop by half, Rebecca, that's just so encouraging. It's almost common sense, though, isn't it? I mean, we look back going, huh, okay, we should have done that in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that lots of kids experiment with substances in adolescence. And you know, when you think about those 23 to 28% of kids who experimented with cannabis, that's still, you know, the bulk of the population maybe not experimenting. The problem is the kids who have end up having problems with cannabis and other substances are those kids who are most vulnerable and most at risk, right? So I like to say everybody uses drugs. The people who develop problems, most often younger people, you know, those are people who have other risk factors like community level factors, family level factors, mental illness, trauma, and violence. So when you roll out those community level interventions, you don't stigmatize and separate out those kids, but you have a wide net and you can also catch those kids and attach them to positive behaviors, right? And that's also a really positive thing.
Especially when it becomes the cool thing to do, which is sounding like what's happened in Iceland. It's the thing to do now, which I guess is all powerful.
Yeah, I think the message we need to send most often is that the best education about substance use is not specific to substances at all, but it's about promoting resilience and targeting some of those risk factors at the community for youth. So a lot of times when people are saying, when I'm giving talks or at community forums, like, what can we do? What do we need to have in place? We're not ready. I say, just continue doing all those positive things that you're doing in your community to support youth in terms of recreation, sport, community engagement. If we strengthen those, that's where I think our best return on investment is.
Oh, great, Rebecca. Well, you've given us all a little peace of mind, and letting everybody know about the Iceland model, I think, is really, really encouraging, especially when you see in cities like Edmonton, Alberta, there's free swimming. And also, we see on the East Coast an interesting development in youth sport. One fee for all sports, giving kids access to pretty much all sport rather than having to register from sport to sport to sport. One fee gives them access to all sorts of activities that they want to get involved in. So perhaps we'll see this really, really catch on across Canada. Great for youth. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think those models are really positive. I think it's up to governments to provide some type of baseline awareness about risk factors. But I would like to see future investments in those types of programs to support youth, because we know that improves not only substance use outcomes, but mental health outcomes.
Rebecca, thank you so much for your time. Listen, this has opened up a Pandora's box of questions and concerns. You've really put out a lot of fires for everybody today. Want to thank you so much for that. And listen, we're going to be talking again. There's so many things that we, I think, still need to cover here, but I wanted to thank you for your time today.
Okay, and you can find me on Twitter if people have follow-up questions.
Yeah, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Rebecca Saw, S-A-A-H.
Great, Rebecca. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
All right, there you go, everybody. A fantastic conversation right there. Again, to get that podcast and listen to that again, you can go to our website, crushperformance.com. Hey, listen, we're going to wrap this up very quickly when we come back after this break, and we're going to talk about the impacts of alcohol really briefly, so stick around.
This is Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information with Jeff Crushell. Get in the action and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome back, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. This is Crush Performance. Today's episode, Drunk and Stoned, the impact and effects of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. Just got off a great discussion with Rebecca Haynes-Saw from the University of Calgary, talking about the developmental issues. And Brennan, honestly, all of our research over the last 3 or 4 months, everything has come back to youth and concerns about youth. I mean, the adults, it's too late for us anyway. We should be smart enough, even though most of us aren't. You know what I mean? Though I will say this, ladies and gentlemen, our Twitter poll at Jeff Crush asked a very simple question: which is worse, alcohol or pot when it comes to performance and development. And our Crush listeners, they hit the nail on the head. I think 95% are saying alcohol. And you're absolutely right. When it comes to the physical side and developmental side of thing, alcohol is just a disaster out there. And I think, you know, because it's so legal and accepted in society, we kind of underestimate the physical implications of alcohol. But with the legalization of pot in the US and certain countries around the world and coming coast to coast in Canada, I think that uncertainty has raised a lot of concerns, Brendan. And I think that conversation with Rebecca has really maybe provided a lot of answers or maybe soothed some concerns out there.
She sounded really relaxed. I mean, she sounded like, yeah, there's different things you got to be worried about. But she kind of, I think, put some of those worries to rest. I mean, she, except for the one thing, she did tell us that parents, no matter what, these kids aren't going to listen to the warnings. Like, they may or may not just do it based on who's around them and the peer pressure and all that. But she definitely made it sound like it's not as bad as we may have thought coming in. So it would be really nice to hear somebody that has the opposite opinion. Like, that'd be cool because I want to hear both of the perspectives on it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of perspectives on each side. And I think we're going to go to Drunk and Stoned 2. And we're going to go to that side of it because there's major researchers out there that are very, very concerned about the development of our youth in an environment where this is accepted and readily available. So there are some issues there when it comes to the legalization of pot and marijuana, access to THC, the psychoactive element of pot, and the CBD oil. And again, both of them have incredible medical potential. Based on the research, we just don't know enough yet. So I like her message of just, hey, take it slow, keep doing what we're doing, talk about it, have conversations, and dig down if you have some questions and ask them. I mean, that's going to be the key here. She did mention a couple of interesting things. You know, when we look at some of the issues that are, I guess, going on in areas where it is legalized, the monetization, the business side of this thing is huge, man. It is gigantic. Even if we just isolate, not even just the medical side of it or the legalized marijuana side of it, but just the CBD oil alone. And it might have some of the most promising health benefits across the board. And there's no psychoactive elements in this side of the hemp oil. So this could be a real important part of what's going to happen in the near future. Clinical trials are ongoing. There's 20 trials, as we mentioned, going on right now. And not only that, there's a $16 million trial going on at the University of Miami right now, looking at the impact of THC and CBD oil on brain trauma, which of course has major applications or implications in the world of sport, but anybody for brain trauma. We know that the hemp oil might have some neuroprotective properties. So this is going to be really, really interesting to follow, Brendan.
We talk a lot about, at least on this show, we've talked a lot about how the younger athletes will be affected. But what's the thing about the older athletes? And a lot of those older athletes have had concussions and had those brain trauma issues. And we talk about CTE all the time and how that's becoming an issue. We have players that are dying at younger ages because they have CTE and their brains just kind of shut down. They have depression and a lot of other brain disorders. And what's marijuana going to do about that? Like, what is the good things about CBD oil that's going to actually help us with maybe relaxing these people in a medical way? And that's going to be a good question. I can't wait to read these studies because I think it's something very important.
Yeah, it is very important. And I agree with you. We need these answers. And, you know, right now we know that a lot of athletes are using it just for simple pain management. There appears to be some serious anti-inflammatory properties when it comes to the CBD oil, though clinically we're still waiting to see what the dosages are and how it affects different people. But on the outset here, it looks very, very promising. And we know athletes right now, world-class athletes, that have gone away from the over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, the ibuprofen and some of the other over-the-counter drugs and pharmaceuticals that are available, and they're using CBD oil and, of course, marijuana to manage pain, and that's part of the process for the medical side in diseases like cancer, where it's readily used. So as we wade through this, I like Rebecca's message of just take it slow, let's just ask questions and go easy. When we look at the industry, it's growing like hotcakes. In 2016, there was a study looking at hemp CBD oil, and it generated over $170 $1 million in 2016. They're predicting it to grow by 55% per year, which means by 2020, this is going to be a $1 billion industry. So we've got to take some massive steps to make sure we have this sort of under control, because it's going to grow really fast, because we know money's going to drive this thing at the end of the day. We're hoping that public safety will be a premier issue when it comes to managing this monster. But the bottom line is going to be driven by money. We just got to get in front of it, I think. And isn't it interesting? We talked about the Iceland model. Education doesn't really work because, as you mentioned, kids aren't thinking long term. They just don't. I sure as hell didn't, man. Oh, my goodness. Hell no. But kids don't. So the Iceland model was really interesting. And I think that's something that we really should be considering across the board anywhere we're starting to legalize this stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, another thing that I would like to point out, too, is just at least when we're discussing alcohol and marijuana, at least we can talk about marijuana maybe having negative impacts, but maybe having those positive impacts. Whereas alcohol, boy, it's really hard for me to find a positive impact of alcohol. It's just absolutely devastating. And at least we have that other possible positive element in the other in marijuana. That's one thing that at least I can look forward to seeing how our athletes react to that.
Yeah, exactly. And no, you know, I think alcohol has been around enough. We all know what it does. We're going to review that in a second, but I wanted to get back to some of the stats and the power of sport here. And that's what Iceland caught on to. You know, we're not going to talk to the kids about what they shouldn't do. We're going to give them options of things they can do. So they made recreation, sport, and sport free on certain days of the week. And they made access to the arts, acting, dance, and music free certain times of the day. And it cut their adolescent alcohol and drug use by half. Listen, in early 1990s to the early 2000s, Iceland was one of the highest user groups for adolescent drugs and alcohol. In the last few years, it has dropped dramatically, and they are now Europe's shining star when it comes to clean living teams. The percentage of 15 and 16 year olds who have been drunk in the previous month, according to a study done in 2017, plummeted from 42% in 1998 when the study started to 5% in 2016. The percentage who have ever used cannabis is down from 17% to 7%. And Rebecca's numbers for usage in Canada in adolescence was as high as 28. So this stuff works. And I've got to thank Rebecca for all her great advice and information there. When it comes to alcohol, listen, we're going to have to get to this in and dig a little deeper. But there's serious issues when it comes to alcohol, ladies and gentlemen. We know the long-term health effects like cardiovascular disease, liver disease. It's been associated with cancers over long-term use. In our athletes, we see depression of the central nervous system, which for any reaction sport, well, for any sport, it's just devastating. It can't happen. We see decreases in endurance, slower recovery. It really affects the glycogen stores in your body's metabolism. And not only that, it messes with your hormones. Alcohol increases cortisol levels. Cortisol is a very, very destructive hormone in the body. And when we have increased cortisol, we have decreased growth hormone. It disrupts sleep, which decreases growth hormone even more, which is a disaster for any athlete. If there's anything we're trying to do, we're trying to maintain or increase growth hormone in our athletes through our exercise and training and our sleep. And alcohol takes away from all of those. On the brain side, well, it gets back to the question of alcohol over marijuana. We know alcohol damages brains and brain cells, the gray matter and the white matter. There are some indications showing that marijuana might have an effect on white matter, but the jury's still out on that. So alcohol gets a losing grade here for sure. So there you have it, everybody. Listen, we are out of time. We're going to take this into a second episode later in the month, in June here. And if you have any questions, again, get to us, crushperformance.com. We have to thank Rebecca Hines-Saw for coming on. I want to thank you all for listening, Brendan for sitting in. And we'll talk to you next week on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist. So thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.